The fruits of modern biotechnology can do more than cure or prevent disease. They can make us stronger, taller, less depressed or anxious. A world in which medical science addresses not only our ailments, but our aspirations to be better in a variety of ways, is a world full of new ethical challenges. Last week, the President's Council on Bioethics issued a report surveying those challenges. It's called Beyond Therapy, Biotechnology and the Pursuit of Happiness. The chairman of the council, Dr. Leon Kass, stopped by to talk about some of the issues the report addresses. For example, extending the human lifespan by several decades. You could say modernization has already done that. People in the developed world live longer than those in the least developed countries. But Dr. Kass says the possibility for the future is qualitatively different.
Almost no one is living today any longer than Sophocles lived 2,500 years ago. What's being proposed now with the new research on aging are developments that might make the human lifespan itself grow to 150, to 180, to 200 years. And while for those of us blessed with good fortune and good health and the continued lives of our loved ones, this sounds terrific, The question is, what would the society look like if we aggregated the consequences of everybody making that kind of choice? Would we have a world in which, because time was indefinitely stretched out in front of us, there would be diminished engagement and things would not somehow be taken as seriously? If we had a world in which we were pursuing longevity for ourselves, how interested would we be in taking care of the obligations to the next generation and the needs of human renewal? I think it's possible to look over the past century where we have benefited immensely from these new opportunities to live out our full lifespan and ask ourselves whether, for example, whether the care of children is now better or worse than it was.
But people who would live to be, say, 200 years might live to see five generations of their progeny with them. Perhaps they might become more sensitive to the needs of their great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren.
Oh, I think it's not out of the question, and this is an empirical matter. The only thing that we try in this report to do is at least to arrest people to think about the social consequences. Who's to say it's a terrible thing for a family that has, say, three girls or three boys to use sex selection technology already available for, quote-unquote, family balancing? But if you then allow this choice to be made, you might wind up having massive changes in the sex ratio, as we demonstrate in this report, in many, many countries around the world.
Would it be a satisfactory answer to say that a very small number of people, that is, the ones with access to the most sophisticated resources, would indeed be able to do such things, but most people would not?
It wouldn't be a satisfactory...
It might be what happens, but...
I can't imagine that the society would sit still for example, an anti-aging technology that divided the already divided society into the poor and very mortal and the rich and people with hyper longevity. So,
but we have accepted the idea that some strata of society will likely have straighter teeth and better shaped noses and be able to do various things to stay in shape better, and it's an inequality.
That's certainly true, and I suppose you could argue there's no reason to single out these inequalities as being somehow more egregious than others. But my suspicion is that, you know, if it's a marginal group of people doing this on the side, it's not going to have very large social consequences. Though we should also be careful. I mean, if it turns out that even a small number of people are engaged in selection of their children for genetic traits, you now live in a world which says that meeting a certain kind of standard is a necessary condition for being allowed to enter into life, and that has effects on a population even beyond its users. Similarly, if you think that happiness is really a biotechnological phenomenon, that begins to change people's conception of their whole lives. I mean, this is one of those cases where if you've got a hammer and you start looking at all kinds of things as things to be pounded, eventually people's perception of who they are and what they need to flourish will change, even if they don't have access to the means.
The report of the advisory council devotes a chapter to considering issues of athletic performance. And I was going to say that it coincides with a scandal involving steroids emanating from San Francisco that's witnessed some subpoenas to great baseball players, and there are great track stars who have been named in it. But actually, it could hardly avoid coinciding with some such scandal because they're all around us.
We have them all the time.
All the time. There's obviously a tension here between how strong or fast somebody can be made through some new effective drug and how strong or fast we think they should be, either relative to others or in view of their own safety.
Well, this is a very complicated question, and although we don't, as the President's Council of Bioethics, think that the questions of sports are somehow the most important mm-hmm. question facing us, it does, since it is an issue already here, we took it up as a kind of case study. Why does this bother us? Mm-hmm. I think beyond the question of unfairness and safety, there is a certain concern that there's a distortion of the humanity of the activity itself. I mean, if you see these steroid bulked up weightlifters at the Olympic, the Bulgarians, the East Germans, you think there should be sort of a separate, there should be two Olympics. There should be an Olympics for the guys who just train, and then there are the people who've been turned by their chemists into some other kind of person, and you're watching no longer, you're watching a performance of humans which is in some way less a human performance. Mm-hmm. And we've already, I think, in sports, by turning more of athletics into entertainment, have begun to use up our athletes, because what we really want to do is simply see the ball travel far, and we don't care so much about whether it's largely the chemist's role.
Well, there's you cite one example, a more modest example of this. I was raised on the wisdom that Ted Williams was the greatest batter in baseball, in part because of his vision, that he had terrific vision. As you point out, Tiger Woods has had LASIK surgery to improve his vision. Anybody can become Ted Williams in terms of vision nowadays.
Well, it's a very nice point, and I think the society has come to accept more and more the use of various means to level the playing field in a world where nature's gifts are not equally distributed in the first place. That's, I think, probably right. And it's what makes the argument here very, very difficult. There aren't any kind of bright lines where you'd say on this side, clearly a violation, on that side, it's perfectly okay, and there's a large gray area. Nevertheless, it does seem to me that no one would want to become the fastest runner on two legs if the price of doing so was to become an ostrich. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the road of transforming who we are in order to achieve a performance which ceases to be in some way ours as human beings. I mean, one wants excellence, but one wants the excellence to be of a still recognizable human activity, as opposed to an activity in which we've somehow turned ourselves into our tools, the better to perform.
Dr. Kass, thank you very much for talking.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Leon Kass of the University of Chicago is chairman of the President's Council on Bioethics, which issued its report, Beyond Therapy, Biotechnology, and the Pursuit of Happiness, last week. There's a link to the Council's website at our website, npr.org.